This weekend, several area high schools will bring out the pomp and circumstance for graduation, as will Northwest Arkansas Community College and the University of Arkansas School of Law. Last weekend, a record number of University of Arkansas students received diplomas, and those earning a degree from the Fay Jones School of Architecture heard a commencement address from Susan Seisnacy, the editor-in-chief of Metropolis Magazine. The publication, based in Manhattan, is a leading journal of design and architecture. During her visit to Northwest Arkansas, Susan went to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, toured some of our farmers' markets, and came to our studio. Her own college degrees are in history, but a post-graduation job at a trade magazine for the food service industry helped lead to her eventual post at Metropolis. But as she pointed out during our conversation, history and architecture dovetail quite nicely.
History is the backstory for design. And then, of course, as I studied history, I studied architecture history, design history. I traveled a great deal on my own. So, and when you travel, you see architecture. And it became like a destination. I wanted to see buildings. I wanted to see city streets. I wanted to see how everything interrelated. I wanted to see the street wall of shops and how the signage kind of worked all together to create a place. I wanted to see parks. So it just became so interesting to me. And then I always tried to make the context for it. Somehow that it didn't spring out of a virgin mind, but it really was settling in a very fertile mind that was paved with history. And to me, that was the kind of the best thing that could have happened to me.
We all experience design and architecture. We don't all think about it when we're experiencing it, like you do or colleagues of yours do. Do you think we have enough conversations about how we use space and architecture and how it affects our lives?
See, I think our societal conversation about design is very superficial. I mean, everything that you see, especially now that there are so few magazines, so few design magazines, and so few sort of really researched ideas put out there. There's a lot of blogs. There's a lot of information out there. But there's not that fundamental questioning of things. It's about it looks good, I'll buy it, I'll trade it in, I'll live in it. That's how we think about it. And that's a very good way to begin the conversation because then you can experience it. Just like your offices, you have this kind of wonderful feeling that it was designed for you. It's not some sort of extruded thing. It's about you here at this radio station who need a beautiful place to work and connection to nature and connection to each other. So when you begin to realize that's what design does, that it connects and it provides a scenery for human activity, then it becomes really interesting.
I know you enjoy talking to young people who are going out into the workforce. And I think one reason is because, well, they're the next couple of generations who could change things for the better or hopefully not the worse.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and you're during your visit here today, you'll be talking to people who will have degrees in just moments after you're done talking to them.
Moments,
yeah.
Yes.
That's exciting, I bet.
That's very exciting. I love being in schools. I love talking to students and young designers because they aren't at that stage where they have to deal with the difficult problems of life. They're not paying mortgages and they're not looking at the kids' braces. And, when life takes over, it's a little bit harder to concentrate on things that you want to invent. You want to see the world in a different way. And I think it doesn't mean that it shouldn't. It couldn't happen. But I think at those young ages, you're just so fresh and ready and without bounds. I mean, you should be really crazy when you're young. You should think about really wonderful things that could happen and then work toward those to make them happen. So I'm very excited to be here and to be part of this wonderful place where architecture is interesting. I mean, you have a beautiful downtown, you have the Fay Jones buildings, you have a beautiful natural setting. So it combines everything that we're all looking for around the world. And I think these kids are very lucky to be coming out of here and coming out with the ammunition that they have so that they can now begin to think about these big ideas.
Well, when thinking about the future, you have a growing middle class in India and China. You have billions of people. We're going to have a billion more in about 20 years. Resources are becoming scarcer. Will that have to, will architecture and design have to change because of this?
Architecture and design are changing because of this. And for the past 10 years, we have had a major shift in the way architecture and design are done. We're much more careful about what products we use, how we build our buildings, where we site them, how we use sun, how we use the sun's heat and light, how we use water and filter it, and how do we reclaim it. Not enough has been done because this is just the beginning. I mean, we have a rating system now for green buildings. It's a very good first step, but I consider it a primitive first step because, you know, I want to see buildings that breathe. I want to see buildings that recycle their water and reuse it. I want to see buildings that produce their own energy. I want to see buildings that grow things and food and vegetation and are part of the natural environment and connect to each other. And so I see this sort of larger organic unity of built environment and natural environment and human environment, which is very exciting to think about because we're on the brink of that. We're seeing that. We're seeing the thinking. We're seeing the experiments already. So, and I think for the students, this is a great time because they can watch who's doing what and elaborate on those and create some of the iterations themselves.
And that extends not just to buildings, but landscapes.
Absolutely.
Gardens, not lawns, yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was very interesting because I was in a city that reclaimed its waterfront and I was so happy. And then I realized how they reclaim the waterfront. It's all chemically dependent grass. We don't do that anymore. We shouldn't do that anymore. We should think about what are the native soils and grasses or vegetation. How do you populate that place with vegetation so that you don't have to water it? What is it that will make it work for that region, for that waterfront, for that culture? And we're asking all those questions now. So I think the chemically dependent humans and the chemically dependent lawns and the chemically dependent buildings are sort of gonna go away, although we have a huge stock of buildings that are that way and we're gonna have to adjust.
I'm gonna take a guess, and I bet you like to be surprised. I bet you like to go to a new place and go, wow, I didn't expect that, or I've never really seen something like that.
Oh, that's what I live for. I mean, I'm always looking for what is it that I can find, and especially in the built environment and people. I mean, I always find people wherever I am that say something or do something or work on something that is really exciting. And then I go away a little bit richer than when I got there first. So, yeah, that's very important to me.
If someone were given an unlimited budget and they could go and you could advise them to go to a city or a place to see spectacular design, where would you tell them to go?
Well, there are many places, but I think the place that I go to every year is small hill towns in Tuscany. Mm-hmm. Because I find that the organic quality of those places and how they were designed and how they managed the breezes to come up to the mountaintop and how they designed hundreds of years ago the not just the ventilation but the shading and the interior spaces and the buildings themselves and the water flow out of down the hillside. It just is so smart, and we have not learned from those. We throw mechanical solutions at everything, and if we observe those places, I think we're so much richer. And also, well, let's not forget, the food is great, and the art is spectacular. So, I mean, you want to go to places where everything comes together.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not necessarily a coincidence that the art and the food and the architecture is all wonderful.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a sense of aesthetic. There's a sense of beauty without it being belabored. I mean, I think what's interesting to me is that Japan kind of pulled that out in me, too. I mean, Tokyo not so much, but Nara and places like that where there's smaller scale and beautiful old and new kind of together and see the sensibilities working and the food is spectacular there, too. And just the clothing and the behavior behavior and the kind of niceness of people. I mean, where do you get on the bullet train and the conductor comes to the door and he bows to you, bows to the car? I mean, that kind of gesture, that human gesture, and in addition to the gestures of the built environment and how people get around, is really important. So I think it's a combination.
Thank you so much for your time. Welcome to Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Susan Saisnacy is the editor-in-chief of Metropolis Magazine. I talked to her last Saturday morning, just a few hours before she addressed the 2013 graduating class of the University of Arkansas Fay Jones School of Architecture.
Mozart may have had an aversion to the flute, but he did write for the instrument, especially when he was commissioned to do so. One of those pieces is his Concerto for Flute, Harp, and Orchestra in C major. A member of the French aristocracy, Comte de Guine, commissioned the piece. He was a flutist, his daughter, a harpist. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Note, which airs the best in classical music Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF Public Radio. Join me Friday for Mozart's Concerto for Flute, Harp, and Orchestra in C major, performed by Emmanuel Pahud Flute, Marie-Pierre Langlemet Harp, and the Berlin Philharmonic, led by Claudio Abbado. That's coming up Friday from 11 to noon on your source for classical music, KUAF, and streaming online at KUAF.com.